Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Get ready to learn about all the great gridiron exploits and those of the wrestling ring as well, and more on the life of Bronco Nagurski from the head of NFL Films Library and author Chris Willis in his brand new book, Bronco, the legendary story of the NFL's greatest two-way fullback. Chris is up in just a second to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we have a great interview lined up today. We're going to talk to one of our friends, Chris Willis, who is the head of the NFL Films Library and an author of multiple books. We've had him on here a bunch of times here on the program, talking about some of his other books, you know, the book on Joe Carr, book on Red Grange. He's helped us out with our football numbers before. And he's got a new book out that we're going to talk about. And I'll let him introduce it to you here in just a moment as we bring in Chris Willis. Welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Now Chris, this is we were talking a little bit before we came on. This is an extremely busy time of the year for anybody involved in football. But for you particularly, this is you've got a bunch of things going on. And I don't know if you wanted to say some of those on air to give them a little bit of pub or...
Sure. And I mean, if you're a football fan, like I said, you're licking your chops now. You know, college football started this weekend. And like I said, we've been working on Hard Knocks. We got two more shows with Hard Knocks. You know,
another outstanding season. You guys hit it out of the park again.
Sure. And then, you know, the kickoff games, preseason, is wrapping up now. Then we got the kickoff game on September 8th. And so, and then the full weekend of football, coming up. So, yeah. So if you're a football fan, it's like I said, I always say it's good, busy. It's not bad, busy. It's all good, busy, to be involved. So, but now we're getting close to real games, especially in the NFL.
And just when you thought Chris was busy with all that he just mentioned, he's also got a book that just came out. And Chris, if you could give us the title of the book and where folks can get it from, we'll talk about it again later in the program as well.
Sure. Yeah. It's a biography. It's a book on Bronco Nagurski, the Bears Hall of Fame fullback. So it's called Bronco, the legendary story of the NFL's greatest two-way fullback. And it just was out in the middle of July. So it's starting to make its rounds. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, and then our publisher is Rowan and Littlefield. So if you go on rowman.com, you can pick it up there too. So, but it's just released the last month or so.
So yeah, I'm sure your email inbox and telephones are ringing and everything's extremely busy for you this time of year. So we really appreciate you coming on and spending a few moments with us to talk about this book.
Sure. No, thank you.
As one thing I really enjoy about your books and those of the listeners that have read Chris's work is how he goes into the detail and the roots of the subjects that he's talking about. And he does the same in this book, in the Bronco book. And maybe you could just give us a little bit of background on where Bronco came from. I guess, first of all, let's start off with what his proper name is, his God-given name is.
Yeah, he was... He's actually born in Canada, just over the Canadian border, in Ontario. So Bronislaw Nagurski was his full name. But that name was very difficult to pronounce, as he was growing up. The family early on, around 5-6 years old, he moved from Ontario to International Falls. His father moved the family to International Falls. And so the kids, you know, started playing with him, but they had a hard time pronounce his name. And so Bronco was a logical sort of Ukrainian nickname that they gave him. And, you know, and it actually, he kept it for the rest of his life. He pretty much went by Bronco, you know, like I said, the rest of his life. And he sort of stayed in International Falls, even when he became, you know, a great player with the Bears. He became a world championship wrestler too in the 30s. He always came back to International Falls, and he sort of lived pretty much his entire life there until he passed away in 1990 in that area. So that's kind of where he was from, you know, sort of a northern Minnesota, you know, up there, you know, near the Canadian border, you know, so, which was like a sort of tough lifestyle, you know. You know, they have like what, I think Bronco used to say a quote, something like they had, you know, 8 months of winter and 3 months of bad snow or bad sledding, you know, for the rest of the year. So he loved it up there. You know, he loved the lake and he loved being a part of that area and that sort of, you know, and he got that reputation of being like a Paul Bunyan-esque, you know, player or personality because of where he was from in International Falls and stuff. So that's where he sort of got his persona.
Well, it's interesting you said the Paul Bunyan thing, because there's at least one story I've heard about, and I think I've even said it on one of my programs that I sit there and I scratch my head. It's a little bit hard to believe. I'm sure there's other ones too about him, because he almost is personified as Paul Bunyan, at least in this one story of how he and his coach at Minnesota, Doc Spears, met. Now, you say it a much different way, which I think sounds more like that's probably the truth. Have you heard some of these tales?
Yeah. I mean, the tale of Spears sort of driving through that area and seeing Bronco plowing a farm field with no horse and then asking for directions and he lifts the plow. But that was definitely a story. I mean, I wrote about that in the book where, because several interviews, Nagurski says, yeah, that was sort of made up and it was sort of a good sort of a banquet story. I mean, he would go with it a little bit and get the chuckle and stuff. But definitely, like I said, part of that sort of Paul Bunyan-esque persona that he got the reputation of.
Yeah, that was the only thing that was missing from that story was the giant blue ox in the background. Sure. You know, yeah. I think so. But let's talk a little bit more about him at International Falls growing up from the book, because I think it really establishes who Bronco is. And, you know, the family sort of goes through some turmoil and some life-changing moments when he's a child in International Falls. Maybe you could describe a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is early 1900s. So, you know, especially in that area, you know, they had some fires. Like his father, you know, started out working in the mills. There's some, you know, paper mills and some, mills there in the area. And they had some fires. And so he had to kind of adjust. And then when they moved to International Falls, you know, he sort of started his own business. You know, he had a sort of like a grocery store there that, you know, became, you know, had a, you know, housing and stuff like that. So it was a little bit of a struggle. I mean, he was never homeless, but he, you know, like I said, but that's all he knew. You know, he learned hard work from his dad, you know, at the store. There were several quotes from Nagurski that I found, you know, it's like, you know, he would go to school and then come back and work at the store. He'd make deliveries in the family wagon, you know, to whoever needs it, whether it was food or grain, you know, sugar or whatever, you know, that they had and things like that. So it was definitely, you know, a country-esque sort of lifestyle that sort of, you know, that they just made the best of what they did. You know, he had a brother and two other sisters, you know, that he helped take care of too, you know, so he learned. And like I said, I think the most important thing, he learned sort of how to be a hard worker and especially the times on the farm and in the mills and things like that. He even did some of that, like he built his body up to be, you know, I mean, he was 6'2", you know, 235 pounds, like just this chiseled, you know, sort of Greek god, you know, and that's how, you know, as an athlete and stuff. So all that came from this sort of hardworking background with his family.
Okay. Yeah, I got that. I mean, if there's an underlying theme to the whole book, it's, you know, the Nagurski family and Brock Bronco emulating that for his whole life. You know, that, like you said, that hard work and putting in all the effort to get the job done and doing a little bit more. And it shows in his football prowess and wrestling as well, as you well define in the book. It's some great examples of that. So some things to look forward to for the listeners that when they pick up the book to read this. Now, he, you have him playing, you know, high school a little bit in International Falls, and then his senior season, he's of high school, he makes a little bit of a change to who he's playing for.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those sort of, you know, era things, you know, those sort of vagabond type of things. Like, there weren't quite as many, you know, hardcore rules, although the Minneapolis high school athletics was there. So, but International Falls was definitely a super small town. So they didn't have a lot of boys playing on the team. So they weren't that competitive. They actually didn't really win a football game when Bronco was there for his couple of years. And then before his senior year, there was a team, most of the teams were like, you know, an hour away because they're so spread out. It was Bemidji was a very good football team. The year before, in Broncos junior year, I think they beat International Falls like 48-0. Although they could see that Bronco might have been the best player on the field, he just didn't have anything surrounding him, you know. So they sort of kind of recruited. It was like, hey, if you come to play for us, you could play on the football team and the basketball team, and you'll get, you know, a little more publicity, and you might be able to go play in college. You know, the coach there, you know, kind of promised him, hey, if you want to go play in college, I might be able to get you into college. So he asked his parents, and so since his parents weren't going to, you know, have to pay for anything, he would stay there. They were going to get him a job, and he was actually going to live in the janitor's room. There was going to be a cot for him in the janitor's room. So he goes down there, but International Falls athletic director, head coach, really disliked it. So they actually asked the athletic association to look into this, and it turned out, like, because he was a transfer, he would actually have to sit out a semester. You know, he did not live in Bemidji. So it turns out that his senior year, he still went because he said it, they still need him for basketball, but all he did was practice and he did not play in the games. So he did actually not play in any varsity games during his senior year. Then he ended up playing the basketball season, and he ended up, actually, he's graduated from Bemidji, not International Falls High School. So he spent 1 year there, and then, you know, he sort of graduated, and then he, you know, came back to International Falls.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting story, but he didn't play. But like you said, he practiced, and you pointed out in your story that some of the things that the benefits he got of practicing with a bigger school that was a little bit more established, a coach was had a little bit more wherewithal, probably a little bit better program, that he learned a lot of things that he probably wouldn't have learned if he stayed at the International Falls team. Is that a true statement?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, Bemidji was one of the better program, especially in that area in the state of Minnesota. So he had one quote that I found in one of his interviews. Like, he mentioned, oh, at that point I thought I could play in college because I was just as good as some of the players, or even better than the players that were on the team. I just didn't get to play, you know, in the games. And so they gave him confidence that, hey, if I do go, you know, to college, and of course he went to University of Minnesota, he thought he could be competitive and play because of the fall that he spent, you know, practicing against a very good team that had some pretty quality players.
Yeah. So he stayed somewhat local, goes to the University of Minnesota, plays for Doc Spears, as we alluded to earlier. And by the way, I think you did a magnificent job. I learned a lot about Doc Spears because, just like you did with Bronco, you went back and told the backstory of Doc Spears and where he grew up and everything. And I'll let the listeners get a copy of the book and do that. We won't spoil that, but it's a fantastic biography of Doc Spears too. I just wanted to point out.
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting guy. You know, he played a little pro football too, you know, with the Canton Bulldogs. Like, he was a very good a pro player before the NFL got established. So, so there's a lot of his backstory, you know, and then obviously coached Bronco, you know, at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's Minnesota. It's really interesting. I didn't realize that this was of issue until you pointed out in the book. It's something I learned from the book that he was the title you have, being a two-way player at fullback. Well, his problem, or not a problem, I guess it's a good problem to have, is he was so good at a couple different positions on offense in college that Doc Spears had a decision to make. And maybe if you could chat a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. He was, I mean, as big as he was, you think, oh, he's going to be a line, but he was so athletic and he was so, not only was he big and strong, but he was so athletic and so gifted, catching the ball, running the ball. Like, he started out really as an end, in his early varsity career. And then he played tackle and then he was moved to fullback, so he could play a variety of positions, although he was 6'2", 225 maybe at the time, he was very athletic and very gifted, with the way he could run. He was just not a big lumbering guy. So Doc had a little bit, he pretty much up to, I think his sophomore year Broncos, like he had Herb Joosten there, who was a very good fullback who did play in the NFL. So he was a senior. So he actually got a lot of the playing time early in. That's why he needed to find a different position. You played him an end, played him a tackle. But once Joosten left, Bronco was a logical choice to play fullback. And, he didn't look back from there. He's, one of the best fullbacks in the country. And then obviously in the NFL. So, but very versatile, Bronco, could have played, tackle or end in the NFL too. And probably would have been, all pro.
Yeah, it's extremely something, like I said, is something I wasn't aware of in college that, he excelled at both. So, the other thing I thought was really interesting that sort of along that same line is his senior year, there's maybe you could just talk about, he played one of those positions a little bit more than the other and what happened with the All-American honors.
Yeah. I mean, his senior year, he's pretty much a starting fullback. But because the most important games were the conference games, it was the West Conference, but it was what would be the Big Ten. So early on, Doc had a little bit of some injuries and some inexperience on the line. So he actually played Bronco in some of those non-conference games at tackle, but not a lot. He did not play tackle very much. But once the conference game started, he back at fullback. He played fullback, and was great at fullback. And so there were most of the newspapers and the media outlets at the time put Bronco at fullback as an all-American, but there were a few, and I believe New York Sun was the big one, that actually put him at tackle. So he actually, although he did not play very much tackle during the season, but they were like, he was so good, let's name him at all-American as tackle. So he actually was named for two different positions in one season. So very unique even at that time.
Yeah, that's really unique, and that just tells you the talent level that the man had at both positions to be that well respected across the country. So very interesting indeed. Okay, so what happened? He plays in his final game, and there's sort of a meeting of different things in his life. It's sort of a pinnacle moment that the final game, I believe it was against Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, when he played at Minnesota. And he had, some things going on. Maybe if you could just talk about that a bit.
You're talking about playing wise or?
Well, his, I believe that was the only game his parents saw, or the first game his parents.
Well, that was the game before,
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah. His senior year, he played, Minnesota played Michigan, and his parents had never seen him play. And it was, so they came down from International Falls, their whole family, and they saw him play against Michigan. He ended up losing, a tough game. So Bronco wasn't in great mood, but because the whole town, actually, it wasn't just the family. It was like, I think well over 200 people from International Falls came down to see this game because it was going to be his last home game. And so they had a banquet at the local hotel there. And one of his sisters brought a friend, was actually 3 years younger than her, but they were pretty good friends. It turned out to be Eileen Kane, who ends up being the woman who marries Bronco Nagurski. So that's where they kind of first meet, and Bronco, you know, is infatuated with her. And then obviously, you know, over the next, you know, 5 or 6 years, you know, they act across paths because of the International Falls, and they end up getting married. So, that was a very fun weekend for him, even though he lost. And then the following week against Wisconsin, like you mentioned, that was his last game, and he wasn't going to lose that game. And so he went out, and he actually single-handedly helped defeat the Badgers, and he went out sort of as a winner in his last game. So, but that sort of homecoming sort of family thing, it definitely at the University of Minnesota was a huge weekend for him.
Yeah, that's a great story. You know, the irony of the sour defeat, and it sounded like he took it hard. But then seeing his family and friends there to support him, and then meeting his future wife—that's a spectacular ending to what started off not so good for him earlier in the day. So tremendous. So how did what happened with Bronco after he graduated from Minnesota?
He didn't actually graduate. So he was still taking classes, but at the end of his senior season, he actually was invited to play in a prestigious All-Star game that was just getting started on the West Coast. It's the old East-West Shrine game that I believe is still around. You know, it's bounced around on the West Coast, but it's mainly played in San Francisco. Well, at the time, this was starting to become one of the better sort of marquee games, especially football games, you know. So they invited seniors to play, and he made the Eastern team to play in that game, you know. And then Bob Tanner was another teammate of his that also played in that game. So this is where he sort of gets the itch to play pro ball. You know, he's like, okay, I think I can compete. I think I can play. So the East team actually practices for 2 or 3 days in Chicago first before they go out to San Francisco. You know, well, at this time, this is end of December 1929. Well, of course, this is George Halas territory. So Halas, likes that this team's practicing there. So he gets the inside scoop. He goes and sees the team practice, and obviously he's very infatuated with Bronco and his running style and his, physicality. And he's like, so he talks to him, say, hey, if you're willing to play, like when you get back from the All-Star game, let's talk, and we'll talk salary, or because I want you for the Bears. So Bronco's intrigued, like, okay, I think there's a few other teams that are riding to him. But so he goes out and plays in San Francisco, and he turns out to be a really good game for him. He's probably the best player in the field, even with Dutch Clark also played on that same game. So then when he comes back, obviously, Halas makes the big push, and, Nagurski, likes what he sees, and he ends up signing with the Bears.
Yeah, interesting. You mentioned Dutch Clark. Of course, if you look on Amazon and your publisher, you have a book out on Dutch Clark as well that you wrote a few years back. So just wanted to mention that, which is also very interesting. So he eventually signs on with Halas and plays in a couple really interesting games during his career. And maybe if you could just highlight a couple of those that I know we've talked about, but they're so interesting. He's an integral part of them.
Yeah. I mean, he's right at that pivotal point where, the NFL, although it's the Depression in 1930s, his rookie year, the NFL is starting to grow. They're starting to think, we need to be in the big cities, and we need to be thinking as a business. So he comes along at the right time where the NFL is sort of on the rise, and some of these games are very important, and even now, 95 years late, like these are some of the most important games in NFL history. The first one mainly is 1932, where the Bears and the Spartans tie. The Port Spartans are now the Detroit Lions, but they were small town team in Ohio at the time in 32. So they tie for the title, or they tie for first place, but there's no championship game in the NFL. It's a team with the best record. So they decide to play a playoff game, but then there's a snowstorm in Chicago the week of the game. And it's just a massive snowstorm. So they move the game indoors to Chicago Stadium, but it's a small field, so Bronco plays, he actually throws the only touchdown. He throws a touchdown pass to Red Grange for the only touchdown, and the Bears win 9-0. But it opens the eyes of the NFL. Like, hey, we need to have hash marks. We need to throw from anywhere behind the line of scrimmage, which you had to be 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. It was a rule at the time. College football made these rules. So they're like, no, let's separate from college football. So Bronco was part of that game and that sort of separate. And then they split the NFL into two divisions and created the NFL championship game, kind of like the World Series with the American and National League in 1933. So the Bears win the Western Division that first championship season, and they play the Giants in Wrigley Field, and Bronco has another great game. He throws two jump pass touchdowns, including the game winner in the last couple of minutes, and they win 23-21. So like I said, and then the next year in 1934, they win the division again. They play in New York, and this is the famous sneaker game. He actually plays really well. But, you know, the Giants put the sneakers on in the second half and they actually win. So there's three consecutive years he plays in, like you said, three of the most important, games in NFL history, the indoor game, the first NFL championship game, and then the sneaker game all in a row. And, you know, so he's and there's more of that in the book, you know, but, you know, these sort of games and what went on and stuff. So but he definitely was a big part of the early history of the NFL.
Yeah, and well, the first and the last of those games you talked about had quite a bit of controversy surrounding them too, where the team on the losing end wasn't so happy about a few things in it. But again, you cover those some in the book, and that's an interesting stories all to themselves. But he ended up only playing, had a short NFL career due to some circumstances that he had another career move. And maybe if you could speak about that just a bit.
Sure. You know, he actually did play the first 8 years of his career. So, which is actually a decent sized career at the time, but in 1937, he was still playing really well in the NFL, but he had picked up professional wrestling a couple years earlier. And, you know, although he had not known quite as much about wrestling, but had a name, you know, like I said, had the physicality, you know, he's a big guy that fit to wrestling. And he didn't necessarily have the best, you know, the greatest personality, you know, he was a quiet guy and stuff. So maybe the flair of it, you know, he had to be taught a little bit more, but he became a very good championship wrestler, caliber wrestler. He was making more money wrestling than he did with the Bears. You know, obviously, like I said, this was still the Depression and House was still trying to manage, you know, a team and keep his team together and try to pay him as much as he could. But he was making more money. And then by 1937, the spring of 37, he's sort of at the top of the list of challengers for the heavyweight, you know, championship in wrestling. And he wins it in the summer of 37. And then if you're actually the world championship wrestler of the world, you have a commitment to a schedule. So it's very unique. And like I said, the book goes into detail of this. I call it the double duty, where the spring and summer he's wrestling all over the place, you know, two or three times a week, he's defending his title. He's making, you know, a decent amount of money, more than he would, you know, with the Bears, two or three times more than he would for the Bears. So he's keeping on the schedule, but you know, his wrestling manager knew he wanted to play football in 37. So in the fall of 37, he does something that I think is just so incredible. He's wrestling sometimes during the week, and then he's playing football on Sundays. You know, he did that early in the season, and then he kind of scaled down, you know, at the end of October, November, and then he just played football because that was the meat of the NFL schedule, and House wanted him to focus on football. But he's doing this double duty. And like I said, there were some times where he would wrestle, you know, on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and travel back to Chicago on Saturday, and they play on Sunday, and then be back out on the road wrestling, you know. And so it's just a tremendous athletic event to be able to do both. And then, unfortunately, like I said, after the 37 season, he decides, like, if House can't meet his salary demands, which wasn't very much, I think he was making like he's back up to $5,000 a year, and he just wanted $6,000 or $7,000, and House wanted to stay at five, and he just said, "Well, I'm going to go wrestle." And then he ended up his first retirement. He did come back in 1943 when the war was going on, but he had missed 6 years, and he just played tackle. He had some injuries, but he did help the Bears win a title in 43. During the war, but So those first 8 years, and then that was his ninth year in 1943. But like I said, that 37 season, just a tremendous achievement.
Those are some pretty demanding jobs when you're moonlighting as a football player, and especially the rough and tumble era that he played in. And you're also, you know, doing some pro wrestling, which, you know, pretty physically grueling too. And you're doing those multiple evenings a week. And wow, that's a pretty tremendous athlete. And did he suffer any injuries during that earlier time? I know you said in 43 did when he came back.
Yeah, no, I mean, he had, I think in 35, he had a back injury that kept him out a lot. Like he had, obviously, when you're playing football and you're playing Reds, you're going to come across things. And it did affect him a little bit later with some arthritis and some joint injuries, you know, later in his life. But I think it was more, like I said, just wear and tear. You're a professional athlete. You're doing football and you're doing wrestling. You're going to have some bumps and bruises along the way.
That's amazing to have the fortitude to be able to do that. I just can't imagine that. That's pretty tremendous. Well, Chris, we appreciate you coming on here and talking about Bronco. And maybe if you could, again, maybe if you want to share some of your social media, and again, let us know where folks can get the book and the title of the book again.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's Bronco, the legendary story of the NFL's greatest two-way fullback. You can get it on Amazon. Barzola's, like I said, our Rowan and Littlefield is the publisher, you know, so you can go on rowan.com and pick it up there too. And there's like reviews and features on the publisher's website. So if you want to check out a little bit more about the book, it's there. So like I said, it's a entertaining story of a guy, you know, like I said, it's got a big personality and had a tremendous athletic career.
Yeah, folks, it is a fantastic book. Make sure you get a copy of it. And did you want to share your social media as well?
Yeah, it's CD Willis 83 is on Twitter. So there's more stuff on Bronco, you know, that post and a lot about early NFL history too. So,
well, Chris Willis, we appreciate you and appreciate everything you're doing and during your day job too, as well as what you're doing here with these fantastic books. And we're hoping you're going to write some more about this great era, because you have some great ones out so far. So folks, make sure you go to Amazon and just look up Chris Willis's name, and you'll see the big rundown of all these great historical football books.
Oh, no, I appreciate it, Darren. It's always nice to be on the show and talk a little football history.
Thanks, Chris.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.